Who puts shuffleboard in their calendar? That's suspicious.
He doesn't even have a custom shuffleboard stick.
He doesn't even...
He's never been on a cruise in his life.
Yeah.
You've never been to the Bahamas? Liar.
You've never been on that little side part where on a cruise they have the shuffleboard yep. thing on the floor where all the pensioners go at 2 p.m. because it's pensioner club time and shuffleboard is on the calendar for that day and the pensioner club. Hello and welcome back to episode 13, season 2, episode 3 of the Idiots Anonymous podcast. We've got a guest here today with us and we'll introduce her in due time. So I'll start us off with just some introductions. Hi, I'm Ryan and I'm an idiot.
Hi, Ryan.
This is where you say hi, Ryan, Emma.
Hi, Ryan.
I'm really running out of idiot stories at this point because of how frequently, like, we recorded the last one like on Sunday. It's now Thursday. So I can't be stupid at that frequency. So probably one is, this week I let bacon go blue in my fridge.
What?
But not from mold, because like if you look at raw bacon, right, it's going to be pink or red or whatever. But if it's off, like there's some form of chemical reaction that happens in it. And I looked this up because I looked at it and I was like, that is not the right color for bacon. And it was like glistening, like blue, purple. So, yeah, that was silly.
I mean, you didn't eat it, so you're not a complete idiot.
Yeah, I actually cooked it and then was like, no, nah. And then just put it all in the bin.
Right, well, jumping off of that, hi, my name's Ruri and I'm an idiot.
Hi, Ruri.
Hi, Ruri.
She was nice this time. So if I mentioned that I play Ultimate Frisbee, yeah, I know, I'm really bloody cool.
No, you've never mentioned it.
Well, so to play in the UK under UK Ultimate, which is like the governing body, you need to sign up for a membership and you just do that online and it's really easy most of the time. But one year they changed the website that we were signing up to. So me being not very bright and just trying to figure out how to get onto this page, I accidentally got a membership to the Irish Women's Table Tennis League. And I still get emails from them, like updates. I even got one today.
Do you just not want to unsubscribe?
I don't know how.
That's you locked in forever, mate.
Yeah.
Unlucky.
I mean, I like sport and stuff, but I'm not sure if Irish women's table tennis is too niche for me.
I think one day, maybe like 30 years from now, you're going to like actually go over there and join in like one of the games and they're going to be like, you're Ruri. You're the Ruri who's been subscribed.
You're always time. On our lists. We had no idea who you were.
Your turn.
Okay, what did I say? Hi, I'm Emma and I'm an idiot.
Hi, yeah. Emma.
Okay. Wait, do I do it again or do we take that one?
Yeah, say it. Say it with...
pizzazz.
As if you're excited to be here.
Okay. Hi, I'm Emma and I'm an idiot.
Hi, hello, Emma.
I'm an idiot because last week was when I realised that lungs are not just flesh balloons.
What?
Keep in mind, I have never done biology at school, but I do come from a family of doctors. So, you know, I just assume I zone out at these kinds of conversations. But I just thought they were hollow balloons. They talk about people puncturing lungs. No. Are other people finding out this too? Ryan, are you a fellow idiot?
I'm sorry, what?
They've got channels in them, though.
They have ventricles,
yeah,
which are like little hollow veins that the air goes through. And my understanding may be completely wrong, but this is what I understand. There's like hollow tubes and then there's like wee balloons at the end of them. It's not just hollow.
If you get bronchitis, those little things close up, the little balloons.
I need to look up a diagram or some form of video of this because I work in the medical field and I didn't know anything about
them. Because I always assumed that they were. And people talk about them being punctured. And I was like, in what way does that not mean something just balloon-like? Well, something yeah. they like completely popped. But like, anyway, glad to know I'm not the only medically incompetent one.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're at home amongst us.
You're at home here, yeah. Thank you. I think, well, on behalf of me and Ruri, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
We're longtime friends with, well, each other. I think Ruri wanted me to mention that we are honoured to have you balance us out because we are awful people and you're actually a really, really nice, good person.
The embodiment of an angel.
Yeah, yeah. Emma is the embodiment of a moral compass.
Yeah.
A poorly researched moral compass.
Do you want to introduce yourself and your, suppose, what?
Sure.
What qualifies you morally?
I suppose it started, we all did the same course together, and we had to do our dissertation, and I chose to do mine on, are product designers or marketers more evil? Which involved a lot of moral philosophy. The verdict of that, by the way, was marketers are more evil, if you're curious. And that sent me on a bit of a rabbit hole of looking into moral philosophy, and I found it quite interesting. And then we hit lockdown and I had a lot of spare time, so I watched a lot of moral philosophy YouTube, a riveting hobby.
Is that a whole corner of the internet?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. That makes contrast from me watching like Indian guys building mud huts side of YouTube.
No, I'm on that one too, don't worry.
you should definitely be on that one.
Recently it's been Swedish men building log huts in the wilderness.
Oh, I've seen videos like that. Have you seen the ones where like it's a video taken over the course of like a year building a whole log cabin by yourself?
I was watching that.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, I digress. So,
I've also been to actually two philosophy festivals in the
moral philosophy festivals.
Wait, so I'm guessing they don't have like an EDM stage and like
they do have a dance Zoom. These have been virtual because they've been on Zoom. They're usually in person. Yeah, they've got, so it's like a bunch of TED Talks or like debates happening at the same time.
Cool. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, they were really good actually. I went with one of my friends. Went on Zoom. But they're good. They do go a bit over your head at times, most of the time, but it's still interesting to listen.
Yeah, I would like to show up and see what types of stuff is going on, but I feel like I would definitely be out of my depth there.
There's another one on May. You want to come? I'm gonna have ended up going to three in a year.
Nice.
I'm just addicted to philosophy festivals.
That's me.
So this week we've got Emma, who's qualified for this topic. The topic is moral dilemmas, and that is, pun intended, dilemmas. So what me and Ruri have done is we've found a couple of fictional scenarios each. We're going to present one at a time and we're going to have a discussion and come to a conclusion. And I feel like you might disagree with us because we have bad morals.
We're not good people.
So Ruri, what did you find? Have you got any good, interesting ones?
I have like a really like deep, harsh one. But I also think it's quite good. So I'm going to stick with it. So
go for it, mate.
Diving in the deep end.
Ken, he's a good guy, is a doctor. And one of his patients, which he's diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, is about to receive a blood transfusion prior to being released from hospital. He's told Ken, in the confidence of their doctor-patient relationship, that if he gets this transfusion and gets his medicine, he intends to infect as many people as he possibly can. But because Ken is bound by doctor-patient confidentiality, there is no legal way to stop him from carrying out the plan. So even if Ken warned the police, they're not allowed to arrest them because medical information is protected. It occurs to Ken that he could contaminate the medication and put an untraceable poison in it so that his patient will never get the chance to spread it. Is it his moral obligation to kill the man who's planning on infecting as many people as he can? Or should he carry out his doctorly duties, you know, help the guy, let him out, and to do his dastardly business on the world?
Wow. I feel like I'm going to stay quiet for a moment because I see Emma's smile.
No, I just think it's quite interesting.
I know this one. I know the answer.
No, I don't. I've not actually heard that one before. I mean, I would argue from the perspective that he shouldn't poison the patient because that would not just go against doctor code, but infringe on this man's right to live. Whether or not he's going to kill other people, it's still not the doctor's responsibility.
But, but,
but Emma.
But, but he's going to infect loads and loads of people, like possibly unlimited people with a horrible disease.
There must be something under patient confidentiality rules where if your patient tells you that he's going to be a terrorist, you're allowed to phone the police.
Well, probably in real life.
In this
life,
scenario,
yeah.
There aren't. Okay.
But yeah, in this scenario, you're bound by the laws I have set out.
Mm. Wow. So the medical laws just like supersede all other laws.
It's true. Doctors have more powers than police.
Wow. So then I'll arrest them.
This is a citizen's arrest.
I would not put poison in him, but maybe like sedate him or like put him into like give him some medicine that'll knock him out for a few days or something.
Right.
And then wait, what was Ken supposed to do? What was he doing?
Ken's the doctor.
Oh, Ken's the doctor.
His patient. We'll call him Gordon. Gordon's the evil one. So if you seduce him, if you
that's one other risk in this moral quandary.
If you sedate him, then you're only delaying the inevitable. You're not really doing anything.
I will cast Oblivio. Oh no, what is it? Obliviate, and then he'll just forget. Oh, but then he's just going to infect people because he doesn't know he's got HIV.
Yeah.
Fuck. What's a creative solution to this? Oh, I know. I would enter a relationship with him and sacrifice myself so that he never gets to sleep with anyone else ever again.
Mm. Make him fall in love with you.
Yeah, I'll make him fall in love with me.
Right. And you're just assuming at this point that Gordon's is going to go for this, is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who wouldn't?
Are we anybody in this scenario? You should pose us as Ken.
We are. I think we're Ken.
Yeah, okay. We're Ken.
Okay, cool. Because otherwise I was like, if Ryan knows about all this, he could just go call the police rather than making the man fall in love with him.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's too much, Philip Paul. We are Ken. We have embodied Ken.
Okay, we are
Ken. Yeah, we are Ken now.
No, I still wouldn't.
Could, as the doctor, can you use your right to citizen's arrest? I don't know how citizen's arrest work. I'm not going to lie to you. Can we do that?
I would say so, but because technically you're not breaching your confidentiality because you're not telling anyone. You're just arresting them.
Well, you would then need to tell somebody. Can't arrest anyone without telling someone why you're doing it.
But what if you just don't tell anyone? You just arrest them and then just keep them arrested in your basement?
In the court, you're like, do you understand the charges? I've not been given charges. What are these charges? He was going to do a bad thing. And I know he was.
But I can't tell you what.
I'm looking at his face. He's guilty.
That's how you frame anyone from now on in the court of law.
So I'm guessing, Emma, in your opinion, the moral choice here is to carry out your duty as a doctor.
I would do that, yeah.
But would you agree the smart decision is to just...
The smart decision is to make him fall in love with you.
Okay. Easy resolve then.
Exactly.
It's like, see those like... So when you're playing a video game and you've got the dialogue choices, one of them is just like, seduce Ken. No, seduce Gordon.
Well, I'll take that. I'm not going to lie.
Kill Jester.
I thought it would be harder to make that decision, but we were very quick to, just, you know, get Gordon. Get him.
Get with Gordon.
If he's got this sort of desire to do this horrible act, then he might have some inner problems, so I think he needs a little bit of support.
Mm, you don't release him, you just send him to the psychiatric ward.
Yeah, just sanction him for, like, I don't know.
Being bloody mental.
I don't know what that's called.
Will to terrorism or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go.
Ryan, have you got a trickier one than that?
Okay, here's one. So, you have a job as network administrator for a company that also employs your best friend's husband. So your name is Emma and your best friend is Jolene.
Jolene.
And you're a network administrator for a company that employs your best friend's husband. One day, your best friend's husband sends you a message asking you to release an email from quarantine. This requires you to open the email, at which point you discover that it's correspondence between this guy and his secret lover.
Bum, bum.
Your best friend Jolene's husband is called Ken.
Imagine him.
Sure, it's not Gordon.
It's not Gordon, no. So after releasing the email, you find yourself in a bit of a position. Your instinct is to tell your best friend about his husband's infidelities, but divulging the contents of company emails is against company policy, and you could lose your job. Once it becomes plain that your best friend found out about the cheating husband through the company email, all trails will inevitably lead to you as the leak. Do you tell your best friend about the indiscretion?
I would like leave some breadcrumbs or invite her to coffee at work, or say, so make up some sort of excuse where she needed to come to my work.
Uh-huh.
And then be in our office, leave my laptop open at this email and say, make my excuses, leave, say I've got to go to the loo, whatever. And then hope that she reads this email and that the penalty is less severe than it would be if I just forwarded it to her.
Could you still get done for GDPR if someone reads it from your computer?
I'm pretty sure so, yes, but I would be hoping that it would be less. They would have, I don't know, the benefit of the doubt that you just made a blunder rather than actively told her.
Surely you could at that point just tell your friend and then say, but if anyone asks, you read it on my computer by accident, and then you wouldn't have to do the whole song and dance.
Or, I mean, if she's really your best friend, then like just tell her and say, you can't say that you got it from me.
So we want to tell the friend.
Yes.
Yeah. You're not going to protect yourself in this scenario.
I would find some way around it.
Right. Imagine you can't find a way around it. Like no matter what, any way of you telling your friend is going to result in you being fired.
Fired? Do I like this job?
Yeah, it's your favorite
You're
job.
You're a network administrator, mate. That's the best job ever.
You love networks and you love administrating. Put them together and that's a dynamite combination.
Mm-hmm. You're an EXO network administrator.
You're EXO. And you don't know how cool EXO is.
I would work my way up the company till I have power over everyone.
Yeah.
Including HR.
Yeah.
And then tell her. And they can't do nothing because then they'll get fired. Anybody tells.
Yeah, I do feel like there's a couple of loopholes in this scenario in which you could just subtly hint and then obviously not show her the email, but just make her find out in a way that has nothing to do with the email, you know?
Probe her. Be like, have you ever thought about your husband cheating? Subtle. Subtle is the approach.
Have you been driving to work and thought about your husband, you know, just cheating on you with a woman, you know, at exactly 5 o'clock this Friday?
So we know who the correspondence between means. There must be some indication who it's been sent to.
Yeah.
So what you do is you open, you follow this woman on Instagram, and then you open a group chat with both of them and then leave and say nothing.
Wow. Whoa. Mm. But what if they just go, that was weird, and then leave themselves?
That's true. Here's what you do. You're in charge of administration, right? You check his calendar. You see that he's out for an hour for lunch on the coming Thursday. You know what he's doing, all right? You know. Mm-hmm. You invite your friend out for lunch on the same day and you just make sure you tail the husband.
Uh-huh.
So wherever he's going is where you're going.
I like this plan. I can't see any flaws.
I don't think I've broken any rules in that one.
No.
You look at the calendar and you see that he goes to shuffleboard every Wednesday at 4:23 p.m. Who puts shuffleboard in their calendar? That's suspicious.
He doesn't even have a custom shuffleboard stick.
He doesn't even...
He's never been on a cruise in his life.
Yeah.
You've never been to the Bahamas? Liar.
You've never been on that little side part where on a cruise they have the shuffleboard thing on the floor where all the pensioners go at 2 p.m. because it's pensioner club time and shuffleboard is on the calendar for that day and the pensioners club.
Exactly.
Busted.
So we're busting this guy. We don't give two rats.
Busted.
Stupid Ken.
Okay, well that was easy.
Yeah. So you know, since we're on the topic of infidelity, I've got another one for you. You guys, you've changed occupations. You're no longer an EXO administrative whatever we said you were. You're now an emergency worker and you've been called to the scene of an accident.
We're back to being, what's his name? Not Gordon. Ken. We're back to Ken.
We're not Ken. Ken's a doctor. He stays in, we're actually Barry now.
Okay. No, Ken was the network administrator, but that was like a flashback.
Mm.
So Ken used to be a network administrator to pay for his medical school costs.
And before that, he was married to Barbie.
That's true. This is all canon.
And to train as part of like medical school, he was an emergency worker.
He was.
At nights, at the weekend as well. So, yep, on you.
Right. So you arrive at the scene of an accident and you see that the car involved in the accident is your wife's car. So you run over and you see that she's trapped in the car with another man whom she's been having an affair with. So as you step back, you kind of take in the scene of the accident and you see your wife is really hurt and she needs medical attention right away. So even if she gets medical attention straight away, there's a very high chance that she'll die. You then look next to her at the lover and he's bleeding heavily from a wound to the neck and you need to stem the flow of blood immediately. In this scenario, if you attend to your wife, her lover will definitely bleed to death. and you might not be able to save your wife. But if you work on the lover, you will save his life and your wife will definitely die. Who should you work on?
Lover.
Who should you? Yes, your lover. Who you would actually emotionally is probably different.
How long have we been married?
10 years. You have a dog called Roxy and you've been trying to have a kid.
How did I meet her?
She was an administrative assistant.
And she got cheated on or not, or something.
You met her when you accidentally sent an email.
Oh, that's right. What do you think, Emma?
I think you should, if you know all of this in advance, then you should save the lover.
Why?
Well, they've not. It's been your wife that's done the most wrong to you at that point. I'd be holding a grudge against her. Save the lover. He's not done it. He had no commitments to you.
Who was driving?
Let's just say the lover was driving.
Do you know what? I'm just disappointed because she's done this to Roxy as well. That dog has been with us through thick and thin.
I don't know if there was more to that bit.
No, that's it.
So you say because there's more of a chance you can save the lover, you should attend to the lover.
Yeah.
So is that morality? Is that just pure like statistics?
Well, both. You're maximizing the well-being that you have the capacity to maximize, right? So do you not know if you can save the wife, or do you know that if you try, she'll die?
No. So if you try and save your wife, there's not a guaranteed chance that she'll live.
But if you try, he'll die.
Yeah, he'll definitely die if you try.
Okay, well then you take the one that's got the most probability of saving someone.
Which is the lover in this case.
Yeah.
But is that moral? Like, surely the moral has got to do with the right thing to do. Why is it right to save that one just because he's got a higher chance?
Because isn't it morally correct to save a life if you can?
Yeah. If you want an analogy, if you think about like good charities and bad charities, there are some that are more effective than others, right? You could give your £15 to a charity that you know might manage to get their help to where you're wanting it to go, or you could give it to the charity that you know is going to get the help to where it's going to go. You choose the one that you know.
But what if one is your wife? What if one charity is WWF and they're trying to get pandas to mate with each other, but the other charity is your wife?
I mean, morally, still the lover.
Mm. Yeah, I would say... 10 years of marriage.
stop focusing on
she's
the
had her
backstory.
Time. On to the next characters. One.
But mate, like, see if I'd known her like a couple of years, there's a possibility that she might have been able to hide like some like dark past or something. You know, you see that in the movies all the time. 10 years, Roxy. We adopted Roxy because we were both, you know, having a hard time during lockdown in 2020.
So the fake backstory makes you want to save the wife. Is that what you're saying?
No, the fake backstory makes me even more upset at the wife.
So even more reason to save
so
the
wife. So in any case, we've decided the lover's getting saved.
The lover's getting saved, yeah, I would say.
Cool. Okay, cool. It's quite an easy resolve, actually.
It's going to be like one of those like dramatic dramas where I could see this getting written into like a TV show where you save his life and he feels so guilty for the rest of his life that he becomes like your guardian angel. So he like transfers money into your account like randomly. He watches you and like saves your life from the shadows a few times and things like that. Damn, I should write this down. We've got some trivia for you.
Exciting.
Yeah, so this is pioneered by Rory, who stole it from somewhere else. It's called Fake Trivia, and so I'm gonna just give you like a brief couple of sentences to describe something that's happened in a film, and it's films that you will have seen, and you have to pick out the mistake basically, or like what's not true about the statement, or what's not true about the, I guess, what I've said. So the first one, are you ready?
Is this like a head-to-head?
Head-to-head, yeah.
So should we buzz in?
Yeah, you have to buzz in. That's a great idea.
Do we make our own buzzer noises?
Yeah, you have to make your own buzzer noises.
Right, mine is...
No, I don't want... Oh, wait, do that again? That's
quite impressive.
Really realistic.
Mm. Mine's just going to be bing.
That's too soft. I want to hear it.
Bing.
Bing. Bing.
There we go. That's mine.
Okay, so here's the first one. And just buzz in when... Let me finish it, and then first one, that I hear buzzing gets to take it. So when Harry Potter first went to Diagon Alley, he found out that everything a wizard could need for his first year at Hogwarts may be purchased in this winding, bustling lane. School books, robes, flesh-eating slug repellent, potions, ingredients, wands, and of course, sweets.
The wrong statement is you don't get your robes there.
Wrong.
Can I buzz in and steal?
Yeah.
Bing.
You don't get your potions ingredients there.
You do.
Oh, what?
You're just gonna go through them all.
I don't remember all that you said.
Flesh eating slug repellent. I don't know. I'm so confused. What was the Diagon bit?
Right. I'll just throw a Hail Mary at.
Yeah.
Right. Are you saying in this case that he didn't necessarily go to Diagon Alley? He went to Diagon Alley. Is that the thing?
No.
No, that was okay. Later.
Okay, you haven't got it. So flesh eating slug repellent, you don't get that in Diagon Alley. You get that in Nocturne Alley.
I got it the second time.
Oh, really?
I said it. Yeah.
Okay. Right, Emma, you get that point.
Okay, I feel like I should get half a point.
Okay, fine. Half
okay,
a point.
Thanks. Bargaining for less points.
She's so moral. She didn't believe she could get the 1 point. She just get half. Amazing.
Compass kicking it in.
Yeah. So this one is this is number two. So when Frodo first saw Rivendell, he was mesmerized by its beauty. After the council and a brief argument, Gandalf proclaimed, "Nine companions, so be it, you shall be the Fellowship of the Ring." Okay, yeah.
Is it not nine? Is that the wrong number?
No, it is nine. Nine companions.
I don't remember.
Bing. There is no council. I don't know. It's been so long since I've watched.
That, I would say that's not relevant. So,
okay, sorry.
After the council and a brief argument, Gandalf proclaimed, "Nine companions, so be it. It should be the Fellowship of the Ring."
Uh-huh. It wasn't Gandalf that said that?
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Who was it?
I don't know. Legolas or something? Was he even there?
It was Elrond. Okay, yeah, maybe I made these a bit too hard, but you'll...
Is that a half for me as well? Because it was my second go.
Yeah, you get a half as well.
Yeah!
Okay, next one. Buzz Lightyear, in a desperate mission to get home, spots a space-themed family restaurant and arcade called Pizza Land, in which he encounters a race of alien toys who worship the Claw.
It's
Rory.
Is it Pizza Planet?
It is.
Yeah.
I knew it as soon as you said it. I was like, it's not Pizza Land, and I was like, I can't remember what it is instead.
The Claw.
God damn it.
The Claw. You saved our lives. We're eternally grateful.
I knew my obsession with movies was going to get me at least a point.
Does anyone know a lot about Jurassic Park?
No.
Have you seen Jurassic Park, Emma?
Most of them.
Yeah, this one might be a bit hard. So Jeff Goldblum took a starring role in Jurassic Park as a gifted sociologist drafted in to seek out any problems he can spot with the dinosaur park.
Bang. Yep. He wasn't a sociologist. Oh, I don't know what he was instead. He was a paleontologist. I don't know.
You are correct that he was not a sociologist. He was a mathematician.
Was he? Why did you need a mathematician?
So he was, his realm of study was chaos theory.
Oh, hell yeah.
Cool, eh?
I love chaos theory.
Yeah, there we go. So you get a half point for that.
No, so it's, she gets a one, does she not? She got it first time.
You did just need to say point out what's wrong, not point out what's right.
That's true, that puts us at equal standing.
Mm. You're right, you are right. Yeah. There you go, 1.5 each. Congratulations, that's 150% if it was out of one, which it wasn't, but yeah.
I'll take that.
Yay.
Congrats, guys, you just won the opportunity to be on the podcast.
Eternally grateful.
Rory, you've got a scenario for us, don't you?
I do. So instead of there being like a, I don't know, I guess a right answer with what we were doing in the first part, second part's a little bit different. Emma, we've decided you love morals. We know what you do. You think they're bloody great. You go to all the festivals or whatever. Some of people are at tea in the park, but you're in the tent thinking about people being nice in that.
The thinking festival. Just go to a festival to sit in my tent and think.
It's just good. I like the vibe. But yeah, obviously morals are important. You want to be good because it's the right thing to do. But what if being immoral made your life worse? So in 2014, China proposed that a social credit score that would limit an individual's ability to Transport would increase required deposits for rental houses and would prohibit access to things like bank loans or even education. So if you had a high social credit score, you'd have access to more things. If you had a low one, then you would have access to less. So the system actually got partially implemented in 2020. So it's in its infancy now. But a person is given a social credit score using things like their social security information, criminal history, government records, that kind of stuff. And businesses are also subject to this through things like reviews from suppliers or customer reviews, that kind of thing. This plan is eventually going to be a bit more invasive as China plans to use like camera surveillance. So they would look at you on the street. Who do you hang out with? Where do you go? Do you litter? Do you jaywalk? Are you angry in traffic? That kind of thing. And that will affect your final score. So in what's going to happen is the plan is that if you're a good person, you deserve more. Do you think that a person's moral actions should affect what they have access to in their life?
This is interesting. I would say in an ideal world, yeah, maybe. It's sort of like a good place scenario, sure. But in actual world, I think that would lead to some worrying things, like living in a police state. I don't know. I think morally, it's better to do things because you believe they're the right thing to do, rather than believing that you should do them because otherwise you're not going to be able to have food or whatever.
Yeah. So I guess it's the same as like, are you good if your intention is to benefit from it?
It's like I can't remember what it's called. There's some sort of philosophy thing where it's trying to reason why you should, I think in the scenario it's first brought up is why you should follow the Christian God, right? And it's sort of on an axis where exists, doesn't exist, and then the other side is like consequences or something. Anyway, it's like if he does exist, it's belief. So it's like exist, doesn't exist, do believe, don't believe. So if he exists and you do believe, then you get to go to heaven. If he doesn't exist and you do believe, minimal consequences, you've just wasted some time in your life. If he does exist and you don't believe, you end up in hell for all eternity. And if he doesn't exist and you don't believe, nothing happens.
So whether you believe or don't believe, you've got a 50% chance of nothing happening.
Yes. Why should you believe in... It's not good to believe in something for a threat. Like, you shouldn't believe in something just because... you're going to have eternal damnation, right? You shouldn't be a good person in China because of this police state thing. You should be a good person because you want to be a good person. Like, in the religious context, if you were only believing in God for the threat of going to hell, then you're probably going to end up in hell. It's not a good reason to believe in God, right?
Yeah, I always had that thought, is that, are you better if you don't believe, right, but still choose to be good? Because then surely you are then therefore better because you're not thinking of the consequences. You're just thinking of doing the right thing.
So doing it for, instead of like the inverse option of doing it for a bad reason, if your reasons for doing it are because you want to get to heaven, it's more good to do it knowing that there's never going to be any compensation for being good or reward for being good.
I think maybe the difference in this scenario is that the government definitely does exist.
Obviously, yes. That was not me arguing for God's existence.
I think you don't really have... So I don't think you have a choice, really, in that scenario. Like, let's say you're in China, right, and you're hooked up to the system and you're getting monitored by the government through this scheme that they've proposed. Or have they implemented it?
The early one where you get your score off of, like, your records. Yes, but... there's some ambiguity of how, like, what the averages for scores are. So I was reading that, like, in different areas of China, they have different scales. So it's not working as of yet, but they have it. So you do actually have a score. But what that score means is kind of up in the air.
Imagine, like, restaurants. You had to have a score of 60 of higher to use restaurants, for example, right?
Well, it's like Uber, so, is it not?
What?
Uber, you get a score.
Yeah, you do. But
I think there's also a big flaw in the fact that it's not some objective morality that's being enforced here. Uh-huh. It's Chinese government's morality, which will presumably also, I don't know, have negative points for protest and things like that, which are morally and you should have the right to do.
But I could just imagine like the same thing with the lockdown restrictions. So say, for example, you needed like 60 points, a 60 point rating to use restaurants in like province one, but then province two, the rating system was a bit different. So you only needed like 50 points rating to use restaurants. So you just pure travel about to like different places that have different thresholds.
Well, if they've got all the cameras there, surely they'd be able to track you, know that that's what you're doing, and be like,
that's immoral in itself.
Exploiting the system.
That's immoral, traveling to evade the rules.
That is bad. You shall be
punished. I'm looking
punished.
At you, Dominic Cummings.
Yeah, so I guess maybe the tracking isn't good, but do you think the outcome would be good? Would you quite like to live in a place where everyone's good, but you know that they're not actually good? It's more of a facade. As soon as they go home and no one can see them, bad folk.
No, I would not want to live in a place like that.
I can see, I mean, one of the questions I have is what affects your rating? So you're saying at the moment it's to do with records. So for example, if I don't pay my rent or if I don't pay my bills,
yeah,
that's considered bad. So my rating goes down, mm-hmm. right? You know, what if I'm in a horrible, horrible life position where I've had multiple family bereavements, I'm struggling, you know, I've been made redundant, you know, I can't support myself and I can't pay bills and whatnot. And I'm getting labeled as a bad person because of that.
Punishes circumstance as well as morality.
Yeah.
I guess maybe there'd be like possibly like an appeal thing. So like the same way if you get a ticket or something.
Everybody would appeal everything.
I guess that's true. But if they had, say they had like, I don't know, strict evidence, then you'd have to supply a sufficient amount of evidence to dispute it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, but then you're waiting 6 weeks on a response to your case, and in that time you're banned from participating in society.
Okay, I guess that's, yeah. What if, rather than the government being in charge of this rating system, we went more Black Mirror style? I don't know if you guys seen the episode where when you interact with someone, you give them a rating.
Mm-hmm.
So you can give them from 1 to 5 stars and then it averages them out. And they also have the thing where like, if you have a low rating, you can only get the old rental cars. You can't get the new ones, that kind of thing. So what if that was the case? So it wasn't the government judging you. It was everyone else around you was judging you.
Absolutely not. There are some lovely people that are just like shy or, I don't know, have social anxiety or something. And you're probably not going to like super duper enjoy your encounter with them. Well, that doesn't make them a bad person. That's so subjective.
But is it all not subjective? We're saying like even with the government one, that's subjective.
But at least
too.
There's guidelines to follow there. Everybody would be following their own social compass if that was the case.
Yeah, but the guidelines are the opinion of one.
Mm-hmm. But everybody's still being judged fairly because they're still being judged by the same system, whereas you're being judged by whoever you're around, which could be a completely different group of people than who somebody somewhere else is around.
Is that better? So see, when it comes to a complex subject like morality, surely there isn't one correct answer.
No.
So is it more moral for someone to judge your actions, or for multiple people to judge your actions, because therefore you're getting viewed on all kind of views of morality? Or is it worse to be judged on the single one that's been laid out in front of you because one group of people decided that is the rules?
I feel like if you're going about getting rated by people, if that takes place over like a large enough period of time, it's going to get more accurate. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, so they tweak it?
No. I mean,
a
like
larger sample.
Yeah, the more interactions you have with people, the more accurate that rating is going to become.
Oh, I see. Because you're average.
Because you've got a huge sample size. Yeah, exactly. So like if you encounter like two people in a day, your star rating could be like 1 star because those two people hated you. But over a sample period of like 10 years, your average star rating is probably going to be fairly accurate.
Is it though? Because you'll have the same problem that you kind of act up when people are around.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, you're right. So it won't be accurate to actually who you are, but it will be accurate to what other people are seeing. Do you know what I mean?
What are they rating you on in this system?
In the government system?
No, in the personal
the people system.
I'm going to go ahead and say kind of similar stuff. So if you're outright rude or angry, then you'll get negative. So I guess it's more on approach.
Okay, so it's your sociability.
Yes.
Yeah. The Chinese one would be sort of adherence to rules.
Yeah, so I guess it's two kind of slightly different factors.
Oh, I think the people one would have a bias due to looks. Like if you're really handsome or super beautiful, people are going to instinctively have a favorable bias towards you when they meet you.
That's true. What if I'm a new app developer. That's me. I'm a really smart guy. So the way the app works is you can only rate someone if you have like elongated interaction with them. So you can only rate someone if you work with them, if you were in a course with them,
okay,
if you're
okay
in a club with them, family, that kind of thing.
Not just someone you meet on the street.
But then surely that would have a bias, because there are some people that are, you know, the nicest people in the world to the people that they know and are around, but would, I don't know, abuse somebody that they don't know.
Yeah, because what if they're like really nice to you and then they're rude to the waiter? That's a big no-no. Mm-hmm. That's a big turn-off.
What if...
zero star.
It was like proximity-based. So if you were in that person's proximity bubble three times, then it unlocks, you can rate them.
Yeah, that is probably going to cost you about 37 billion pounds to develop.
Yeah, but
according
think of the
to
returns.
The NHS test and trace.
It's a thought experiment, Ryan.
It's a social experiment, okay? People will fund it.
No, I'm saying because that's how much it costs the NHS to make test and trace.
Well, I'll just nick it then. Is it on GitHub? Can I go and just nick the code? So we're saying that I guess there's not necessarily a way to accurately track someone's morality.
No.
At all, really.
Especially because it's so different. Everybody has a different concept of what it is, even just within one culture, let alone between cultures.
Wait, I think I know how to judge morality accurately.
Oh.
Secret camera prank show, where you see how they act when they don't know they're being filmed.
So what happens is the prank patrol is revived. CBBC show or whatever.
CBBC, mate.
And what happens is you're on a register. So the government go, okay, you are now the one that's going to be tracked. So you don't know it, but the team have been given your details and they're going to go do their experiment. And then however you react, they record it. And then that's your score. And then in 5 years' time, they're going to get you again and see if that score has changed.
The government has it's a branch of the government, just like Her Majesty's Prank Patrol. HMPP.
Right, Emma, what's your official review of this? Do you approve of this? Do you think this is the way we should do it?
I do not. I think these are both horrendous.
Oh. What's a better system then?
I don't think there is one. I think you need to educate people on why they should be a good person.
Why should you?
Because that's a long question. Because it's better for society. I think some of the I suppose immoral things we do are socialized, right? You can be, I don't know, socialized to the big thing in the news just now is to be misogynistic, right? You could be socialized to think that that's an acceptable way to act. But if you take it from the perspective of everybody is born with some sort of intuition as to what is right and wrong, right? Like very few people are born thinking that killing is a good thing to do. And that's because it's not good evolutionarily or socially, right? We're social creatures. We evolved as social creatures. So we want to do what's best, not only for us selfishly, but as a society, because that is then in turn best for us too. You need to educate people on what those intuitions should lean you towards, which is being a good person that is contributing to society. And not necessarily in whatever, I don't know, society has told you is a good way to contribute, E.G., capitalism, right? Like, be a good person objectively.
So what we should do is be good, but not tell anyone about it.
But I don't know. There are examples where you can be good and tell people about it, and that encourages people to do more good, right? Like, there are studies on if you give to charity, and you tell your peers that you are giving to charity, they are more likely to be like, oh, they're doing that, I should do that too, and then do it. So you can create more good by telling people that you're being a good person. People are very influenced by peer pressure.
So we're saying to make a moral society, we don't want to scare folk, we don't want to track folk, we just want to educate. I think that's quite a nice rounded point to end us on.
Yeah.
Do we achieve something? Do we do it, Emma? Do we win?
We cracked the case. Morals solved.
Oh,
next field.
we solved morality.
God, I can't wait till Morals Fest 2021. It's gonna be so good.
Moral Fest. Getting dressed up in all your festival gear, putting on your neon paint to just sit in a tent and think.
Love it. Can't wait.
Love it.
Thanks very much for coming on, Emma.
Thank you for having me. Emma, this was a lot of fun. Thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, we had gained a lot of heat for not having any solo female guests, but that's not because we didn't want them. It's because we're nerds and we don't have any female friends. But it's good to have you on.
I feel honored. Thanks, to be the first solo female guest.
Cool. Well, to everyone who was listening, thank you very much for coming back again. That's a bye from me.
And a bye from me too.
Do I also say bye?
If you want.
Bye. Bang.